Squadron Leader Butler, Reel 1. Could you tell me, first of all, where you come from and something about your family?
I will indeed. I was bred and born in Cleethorpes at 166 Brayton Avenue. My mother and father, when they married, moved into that house, and they both died from the same house. My father was a trawler skipper sailing out of Grimsby. His father was also a trawler skipper. He was washed overboard at the age of 33, and his father, believe it or not, was Earl Fitzwilliam, and that is a fact.
Did you go to school in Cleethorpes?
I went to school in Cleethorpes until I was 13, and then went on to St. James in Grimsby, which was more of an advanced school, of course, and then left there, went on to the Grimsby Fish Docks, where I worked until the war, and then joined the Royal Air Force.
When did you join the Royal Air Force?
Early 1941.
Were you a volunteer?
Oh, yes.
Why did you want to go in for it?
Well, I always wanted to go to sea, and my father said, if you did that, George, going fishing, he said, the door of my house is closed to you forever, because it was such a dreadful life, even though, as a schoolboy, I went to Iceland with him on three occasions. But with him having said that, it really got through to me. And then, when the war broke out, the Royal Air Force sounded most exciting. And since I couldn't go to sea, well, at least I thought I could fly. And this is why I did volunteer for flying duties.
How did you feel about the war? Did you feel at your patriotic duty or what?
Well, I thought so. My mother, incidentally, was Norwegian. And I thought, since I've got Norwegian blood in me, I felt that, well, apart from this country, I might be able to help Norway. In fact, on the airplanes that I flew, I always had the Norwegian flag on the fuselage. And people used to recognize me as soon as I flew in with having... In fact, while you're here, I've got a photograph and painting of the Hurricane 2C with the Norwegian crest on it.
Had your father met your mother through the fishing?
In actual fact, my mother was employed by the Norwegian consul in Grimsby, and in the First World War, she went to help out in a local cafe. Well, it was more of an exclusive type restaurant. And she felt she was doing her war duty. And my father, who then was in the Royal Naval Reserve, he went in one day, I suppose, for a cup of coffee. And he just asked her if, apart from serving coffee, do you serve kisses? And that's how they met.
Did you find it easy to get into the RAF?
Oh, no, I didn't have any problem at all.
Where did you join up?
Where did I join up?
Yes.
Well, I went along to Padgate initially, and they informed me that I'd be hearing from them. And then eventually I was sent along to Stratford-on-Avon, where I did the initial training.
What did you think of the training that you got in the RAF?
I thought it was very efficient indeed, and it certainly sorted out the chums who thought they wouldn't be disciplined, and we found that they were letting the side down, and we in fact helped to sort them out. In fact, by the time we'd finished our square bashing and the initial training, as you call it, we felt we were a pretty efficient lot, and rather proud of ourselves, I suppose.
Did you find it at all difficult to learn to fly?
Not particularly. My first experience of flying was at Fair Oaks in Surrey, and that was the first time I'd sat in an aeroplane, which was a Tiger Moth, of course. And I think it was after 8 hours of instruction I went off solo. And then, obviously, quite a few more lessons on well, the various manoeuvres, I suppose. And completed the training on Tiger Moths, and then went on to Grantham to the Airspeed Oxford, the twin-engine aeroplane, of course.
How keen were you to get into action, or did you dread it?
Well, I was very keen indeed. This is what it was all about, I suppose. And it was at Grantham where I received my wings, and also commissioned, even before I got onto operational flying. That was going up from LAC, of course, leading aircraftman. And then from Grantham, went on to Norfolk, Norwich, onto the Blenheim Mark 1, 139 squadron, and did a few operations on those aeroplanes, and then transferred onto the Lockheed Hudson.
What did you think of the Blenheim 1 to fly?
I thought it was a lovely aeroplane. I thought it was a really first-class aeroplane.
Why did you think that?
Well, because of its handling qualities. And to me, it was a real military aeroplane, having moved off the Oxford, of course. It was the first time I'd had a crew, a navigator and gunner, rear gunner, or mid-upper gunner, to be more precise. And then we moved from the Blenheim onto the Lockheed Hudson.
Could I just interrupt you there?
Oh, please do.
You said you were with 139 Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about the personnel and leadership of the squadron at that time?
Well, it is rather a long time ago, isn't it? I mean, I haven't discussed it with anyone for 50 years, let's face it. But they were a first-class bunch of chaps. I wasn't with them very long, in fact.
What was the nature of the operations that you did with them?
Well, shipping strikes, and the range wasn't all that great, but just a few strikes off the coast of Germany. And
these were daytime operations?
Oh, yes, indeed, they were, yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember any specific incidents in attacking those ships off the coast of Germany?
Well, again, it's such a long time ago that, well, fortunately we survived, and although a little bit of ack, we got over that all right.
Did you run into German fighters?
No, we were very lucky from that point of view. We didn't see any of their aircraft at all.
Do you think that you had much success against those ships?
Oh, I think so. We got a very light bomb load, so, I mean, it was a question of getting in quickly. I think at that time the bomb load would only be about probably two 500-pound bombs, and we'd get in very quickly and out, of course.
And you were flying from RAF War Boys, was it?
War Boys, that's right, yes.
Where is that?
That's Norfolk.
Do you remember anything about RAF War Boys, what kind of a base it was to fly from?
Well, it couldn't be compared with the big bases in Lincolnshire, for instance, such as Binbrook and Scampton, or anything like that.
So this was late 1941 when you were
That's right, yes. It was then converted onto the Hudsons and then flew a Hudson out to Calcutta.
Can you tell me about that, how you got out there?
Yes, I haven't put any details on there, I take it. In the Lockheed Hudson, left Portreath, first call Gibraltar, Bathurst, West Africa, Takoradi on the Gold Coast, as it was then. Maiduguri, Central Africa, on to Khartoum, Khartoum to Karachi, then across India to Calcutta, touching Jodhpur, Delhi, Allahabad, then eventually Dum Dum, which was the airport in Calcutta.
Did you run into the enemy at all on that?
Not at all. No, didn't see a single enemy aircraft.
What was it like on that Trans-Africa route from Takoradi to the Sudan?
Khartoum was the hottest place I've experienced in my life. The temperature was 128 degrees. But we just stayed overnight, anyway.
Did you have any adventures on the way?
None whatsoever. No.
Which squadron was this? Was this still 139 squadron?
Oh, no. I'd been taken off the squadron then and sent to join number 62 in Calcutta.
So you were going out to join 62 squadron?
That's right.
How many of you were going?
Well, I didn't know until I actually got to Calcutta how many would be involved. But I should say there were Hudsons out there already, you see.
So you just went as an individual aircraft?
That's right, absolutely, yes. Yeah.
And how big a crew did the Hudson have?
Including myself, four. Yeah, pilot, navigator, and two gunners, and a bomb aimer, and a gunner. Crew of four, yeah.
What was the Hudson like to fly in comparison with the...
That was a very nice aeroplane, but it wasn't what I call a military aeroplane. And this is why, having done quite a few ops with 62 Squadron, I requested a move back onto Blenheims again.
What did you find once you got to Calcutta? What was the setup that you found there?
Well, I mean, you didn't really appreciate that there was a war going on. I mean, there was no war in India itself. The Japanese, they were coming up, weren't they, into Burma.
It seems that you arrived in Calcutta in June 1942.
That's about right, yes.
So this was the time of the fall of Burma?
Mm-hmm.
Was there no sense of panic in Calcutta then?
Appear to be at all. It was very calm. I don't think the Indians really appreciated that there was even a war on. Life was very normal indeed.
Can you tell me about the squadron that you joined there? about the people in it and its leadership?
Well, I remember the commanding officer was a wing commander, Halliday. I do remember that very well. He was a very fair individual, and the personnel were first-class people. We didn't have any problem at all with the personnel. Everyone seemed to get airborne and to try and find the enemy, which meant going over the bay, of course, and again trying to find Japanese ships, anything that we could strike.
Did you have much success?
Again, it was extremely quiet, and it's such a long time ago that I think we created a little bit of a bother over there in Burma. But it wasn't until I really got on to 60 Squadron, again Blenheim's, that we really started moving what I call war, if you like.
Can we go on to 60 Squadron then?
Yeah, by all means.
Which I think you joined in December for.
That's right. That was, now that's the Mark IV. That's what we call the long nose. I think you know what I mean, don't you?
Yes.
Still a crew of three.
Can you tell me about the duties which the squadron had?
Well, obviously, it was a bomb load every time, or reconnaissance.
Which areas did you fly over?
Well, it would be Assam and I say Burma, obviously it's got to be the west coast, and along that coast, I'm just trying to think of the names of the targets.
Akyab?
Akyab, that's right. We eventually, of course, that would be one of the main targets. It was a port, wasn't it, of course?
Yes. That. And yeah, an airfield.
Yeah, that's right. We made several strikes on that particular target.
Did the Japanese fighters come up to try to intercept you?
We did experience the Zeros. Not as many as we would expect, frankly, but certainly... they did put in an appearance, although I honestly cannot remember any of our chaps being shot down. Then again, the Blenheim was a pretty solid aeroplane, and of course we had a rear gunner. And there again, I can't record any of the Zeros having been shot down. They're a fragile aeroplane, of course, and I do believe one or two in a steep dive disintegrated. I did hear of that.
But were you not frightened of the Zero, because it outperformed the Blenheim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose you're too busy to think of fear, aren't you? I mean... Don't think I'm a... We all have fear, don't we, when our lives are involved. But we just try to think not too much about it, quite honestly.
What was the morale in the squadron life?
Very high indeed. Very high. I didn't experience anyone or hear of anyone... Well, if they lost the nerve, they didn't show it, and they still carried on flying.
Did you ever come across this phenomenon of so-called lack of moral fibre?
Not at all, no. I think from that point of view, I was extremely fortunate. And they're a hell of a good bunch of fellows.
But what about when your comrades were lost in action? How did that affect people?
Well, it was just accepted that it's got to happen, one would imagine.
And you changed in 60 Squadron in August 1943 to Hurricanes.
That's right, yes.
How did that come about?
Well, I suppose the Blenheim had reached the end of its very useful life, and the Hurricane, with just the pilot and not having a crew, was able to more or less administer the same bomb load, discharge the same bomb load as the Blenheim, or practically. With the Hurricane, you had two 250-pound bombs.
How did you like the Hurricane to fly?
Oh, marvellous. Lovely aeroplane.
Did you prefer it to the Blenheim?
Oh, well, yes. Frankly, it was more manoeuvrable, and you could get in and out of problems if and when they came about. And you didn't have to rely on the crew as good as they were. Which, of course, they were. They were excellent. But you were in total command. And it was the extra speed and the manoeuvrability of the Hurricane, which was so much appreciated.
You got the DFC when you were flying Hurricane operations in India with 60 Squadron.
Well,
how did that come about?
Well, it was when I left 60 Squadron to go to Agra as a liaison officer, and there were one or two American airplanes there, which the Royal Air Force flew, which I checked out. And it was while I was there that I was informed that I'd been awarded the DFC. By that time, I think I'd done something like 130 or 140 operational trips. So I suppose they felt that an award might have been due. But in Agra, I was most comfortable. I had my own motor car. They were Americans, of course, I was based with. My own motor car, my own little aeroplane, where I could fly around. And it was a Fairchild Argus, the aircraft. I'd probably fly one or two of their senior officers to other bases, and courtesy calls on our own senior personnel. And having been notified of the award of the DFC, I sent a signal back to Air Marshal Vincent, thanking him for this, of course. And I think I must have been a nutcase, because I asked him if he could get me back to the front line as soon as possible. And I got a signal by return to the front line to Command 11 Squadron.
Why did you want to return to
the front? I don't know. Well, I mean, it was just in my blood, I suppose, and I just detested the Japanese, and I still do.
What made you have that attitude towards the enemy?
Well, there was a lot of cruel sods, weren't they? I mean, I didn't like their type of warfare.
What did you think would happen to you if you fell into their hands?
Well, I shudder to think about it, and well, in fact, I know this will come a bit later on, but when I did take over 11 Squadron, our doctor informed me that he'd just like to go for a bit of a stroll into the jungle, and when he hadn't come back after an hour, I got a bit concerned. And we organised a search party, and the Japanese had come across him and shot him and killed him.
Had you felt as hostile towards the German enemy?
Not really. I suppose for the simple reason I hadn't been quite so personally involved with them. And of course, I suppose the living conditions out in Burma and India did make a difference to how you felt towards the enemy. You felt, well, if it hadn't been for the Japanese, I wouldn't be living under canvas for almost 2 years and suffering malaria and dysentery and goodness knows what, whereas against the Germans, flying from this country, we were in reasonable comfort, of course, even though I was away from my wife, you know, and at least I got home occasionally, but flying from this country.
How uncomfortable was it in India?
Well, it was really, I won't use language, but it was bloody awful, as you can imagine. I'm back at 11 Squadron, I'm with 11 Squadron now, you appreciate that.
Yeah.
I was living under canvas, I used to put my flying boots on to go to bed, and so on. In fact, the Japanese used to call me out, they used to call me by my name, only 45 yards away. That's how close they were. While I was trying to get some sleep.
Where was this?
This is now in Burma. We've moved a station or two, well, I say a station, an airstrip. I think I made a note of those.
You've just put 11 Squadron October, joining 11 Squadron October 1944
mm-hmm.
In Burma. You haven't put whereabouts in Burma it is.
Oh, I see. Well, while I was with them, we moved to three different bases. And I left them at a place called Sinthe, Sinthe. But prior to that, we'd been at a place called Kangla, Kangla, and Tamu, Tamu. But you appreciate, there weren't concrete runways. They were just cut out of the strips, cut out of the jungle.
How do you think the Japanese knew your name?
It was just George, of course. Sorry.
Oh, they used your Christian name, not your son.
Yeah, that's right. This George, you know. And they must have found these names out from the villagers. They mixed with the villagers, you see. And they were so close. And
why did they not attack you and attempt to kill you if they were so close?
Well, we obviously had guards on. Well, we did have our own few guards, and we had a few guards from the army to try and protect us to the best of their ability, of course.
Did you have the RAF regiment protecting you?